This is WMNF Tampa. Stay tuned for True Talk
podcast. Today's program, we're speaking about Israel's claims of sexual assault by Hamas on October 7th as a weapon on that day. And there's been a lot that's being reported on it. There has been a lot of allegations at the United Nations and different media outlets. In fact, in late December, the New York Times came out with a feature story investigative report that they called titled, quote, "Screams Without Words, How Hamas Weaponized Sexual Violence on October 7th. And there's been a lot of pressure on the United Nations and the United States and politicians around the world to put to about this claim of the use of sexual violence and rape of Israeli women on October 7th. And much of it was used to justify the ongoing violence and genocide that's happening in Gaza today. On today's program, we're actually going to be speaking to investigative reporter Arun Gupta. And he's a journalist who has written for The Washington Post, The Nation, Raw Story, The Intercept, The Guardian, and others. He's actually a graduate of the French Culinary Institute in New York and is the author of the upcoming book, Apocalypse Chow. And now he's joining us. Welcome to True Talk, Arun.
Thanks for having me on today.
Thank you. I brought you on to talk about your recent article in Yes Magazine, where it's titled "Claims of Mass Rape by Hamas Unravel Upon Investigation." And it was important to have this on because this is one, a sensitive topic, and especially when it comes to sexual assault. And there's been a lot of allegations that have been made about it. Some of the biggest media outlets in the world, including the New York Times, seem to say that it took place. Since that reporting, as you said, it's coming apart, it's unraveling. But before we get to that, just let's go back to October 7th and shortly the days after that. There were a lot of claims that, you know, were immediately made on social media, in news outlets that were not challenged. We were only hearing one side, and it was the Israeli side. And some of those claims that were even repeated by people like President Biden, but if you can take us back to that day, what were some of these type of atrocities that were attributed to Hamas on October 7th?
Yeah, so at this point, what I call it the great Israeli rape hoax. And I want to be very clear, we're talking just about October 7th, because very recently, in the last day or so, the New York Times has found an Israeli woman who has come forward with a very credible, very believable story that she was sexually assaulted once in captivity in Gaza. She was left alone with a young guard for weeks. And, you know, I encourage people to read the story. Because this is part of the complexity, as you alluded to. Rape is a fact of war. Rape is used as a weapon of war. But what myself and other journalists, particularly Edmondo Weiss, also I published another piece in The Intercept on this, as well as Electronic Intifada, we have been debunking the October 7th rape claims, not because we're trying to deny them, but because from the very beginning, they seemed completely dubious and outlandish. And so you're correct. Immediately after the October 7th attacks, you know, which were a massacre, I've watched every single video I can find that's publicly available, viewed hundreds and hundreds of grisly photographs, and, you know, it's sickening. You know, it's clear that Hamas militants came on a mission, which was to kill people and take prisoners. But what did not happen is all these just completely fabricated allegations. The allegations that start to get the most airplay immediately after October 7th was not so much the rape allegations, but all the ones about dead babies. So
right, the beheaded baby story that they supposedly claimed to have found.
There were endless stories. So there's a colonel in the IDF who claimed he found 8 burned dead babies. There was another IDF officer who ended up admitting he was lying. He made up the story, who said that there were dead babies and children hung on a clothesline. There was stories about 40 dead babies. One official with a rescue group said that there was a dead baby that was put in the oven and the oven was turned on. So they're just endless. There's actually 6 different variations of a story of a pregnant mother and her fetus being butchered. And I showed that ultimately all these, there are thousands of stories that were published in the Western media lending credibility. And what I did was show that there's really only 12 sources account for the vast majority of claims. Now, there's a bunch of people on the fringes who, like, they might be in one story or two stories, but it's really 12 people who account for the vast majority of claims. And of those 12, 11 of the 12 are directly connected to the Israeli military or police. 8 of the 12 have fabricated stories, and 6 of them have fabricated stories about dead babies. So, and what this was meant to create this sense of outrage that Hamas was this unique evil. And of course, it's very easy to understand what's going on. You're talking about burned dead babies. You know, it's this propaganda, atrocity propaganda, meant to make Hamas look exactly like the Nazis, right? When else do we see burned Jewish babies? And these all turn out to be complete lies. Netanyahu's office puts it out, and Biden, 3 times Biden publicly says, even after he was warned the first time not to say it, that he saw photos of dead babies, and then the White House had to walk that back. And then he said it on 2 more occasions as late as December 2023, long after the story had been completely debunked. Israeli media have completely debunked this story, saying, like, none of these things ever happened, which is the journalistic way of saying that it's a lie. And so we have to remember this is the atmosphere where these rape claims then start to be made in. So what happens is, because all these dead baby stories were shown pretty quickly, because if you're saying there are 40 dead babies, some reporters are going to be like, okay, well, where are they? Right. And then the stories start to fall apart. And so the media initially were reporting rape claims, and then they started to retract them because they say, we don't have any evidence. So things went silent for a couple of weeks. And then starting about in late October, you start to get these basically civilians who are making these allegations, but who are tied to the military. One of them is Sherry Mendez. She works at the Shura Army Base, which is one of the main morgues for processing human remains. And her job was to wash and prepare the bodies of dead female soldiers. She starts to go before the media and make outlandish claims. She told, you know, this story about a pregnant mother and fetus being butchered. She was also talking about, like, beheadings and, you know, body parts cut off, and, you know, that there was children, women, and grandmothers raped until their pelvises were broken, which is, of course, like, you know, the pelvis is one of the strongest bones in the body. And no one else is,
like, not possible. Nobody's challenging these types of claims.
No one is challenging them. You know, it's because the Western media are just basically act as a pipeline for Israeli Hasbara propaganda. And so she's one of the first ones. And then there's this.
What was her name?
Sherry Mendez. So there are 3 different people at the Shura military base, 2 of them who are, one is a retired general and another is, I think, a colonel, or he might be a general as well. They're basically the former chief rabbi of the military rabbinate, and then the current chief rabbi of the military rabbinate. They both told these stories about, like, a butchered woman and fetus. So totally fabricated, coming from Israeli generals, right? So
and were they saying, claiming that they witnessed these things? They saw the bodies?
Yes. It's like I've read the stories of some of them have given on-camera interviews wherever possible.
The thing that I found interesting back then is that all these claims kept coming out, but there was no response. There was no one challenging them. And there were like no calls. There was no specific investigations that were happening at the time. They were just going unchallenged, where normally news outlets were at least try to check other sources or say this hasn't been verified. But they were repeated as a matter of fact for weeks, if not months, as the bombings continued. And they went unchallenged. I don't even remember if they actually went to like tried to get a comment from Hamas or anyone else from the other side.
Well, you know, Hamas are savage, barbarian terrorists. Who can believe that? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean that's the whole thing. The just insane double standard, right? That the media will believe the most absurd atrocity propaganda, just bizarre stories coming from Israeli sources. Meanwhile, there was this whole, you know, just trashing of the health ministry in Gaza. And for months, their figures were rejected, even though everyone in the world, including the U.S. State Department, including the White House officials, are citing the health ministry's statistics as completely accurate in terms of the number of deaths. There was this New York Times piece about a one-ton bomb being dropped on the Jabalia refugee camp, where, according to the health ministry, nearly 200 civilians were killed, and there was no militants there. And even if they were, it's just so wildly disproportionate. It's a war crime. And the New York Times is just using all its own estimates of deaths and then other international organizations. And finally, towards the bottom of the article, it's just like, oh, yeah, the Gaza Health Ministry said, like, you know, there were over 100 deaths. And it just completely just downplaying. I mean, this war has been basically, the Western media treat Edward Said's Orientalism not as a book of historical analysis, but a how-to manual, right? You know, the war reporting has been just completely Orientalist. It's about, you know, the rational, enlightened, democratic West against the irrational, savage, backwards, and superstitious barbarians. That, you know, that explains the coverage better than anything else. But it, in any case, so it was starting in early November is when all these rape stories start to gather steam.
First, it was the babies, you know, stories of the babies, the stories of those type of atrocities and going after the children. And then you started hearing these claims about the rapes and these campaigns about that the world believes all women except Jewish women or something. You know, they had this campaign. They were taking out ads. There were ads on Twitter or, you know, now X, on social media to try to push this claim. Like, if they're actually, why are you sponsoring ads and pushing out an ad campaign to push a specific narrative? It felt like a very, you know, artificial type of ad campaign. Because if you have the evidence is there. And the one thing that people kept asking is for evidence. Well, first about the babies at first. Where is the evidence? And they say, well, it's so gruesome and we have more respect for the dead than Hamas does. And that's why we're not going to put images out there. But the reality
is, which now do not exist. Which now turns out is a complete lie, right? You know, so all these news organizations, they basically swallow the Israeli Hasbara hook, line, and sinker. So we keep hearing, you know, there are three things, you know, that as journalists, investigative reporters, we're going to be looking for. We're looking for survivor testimony, we're looking for forensic evidence, and we're looking for photo and video evidence.
Right.
And the fourth thing is credible eyewitnesses, right? And so you do get people who are claiming that they're eyewitnesses, such as most recently, the Times was forced to admit that one of the most widely cited claims, which is this military paramedic, he comes from this Israeli Special Forces unit, it's Air Force Search and Rescue Unit. They were set up to rescue pilots if they were shot down behind enemy lines. And he first appears on an Indian, a right-wing Indian television news station. We need to remember that India is one of the biggest supporters of Israel, because they are completely, you know, India is this totally fascistic, Hindu fascist government, viciously anti-Muslim, Islamophobic. So they have completely allied with Israel. And this paramedic from Unit 669, he appears on this Indian TV station, Republic TV, I believe it was October 25th. Like I said, read the Yes Magazine investigation I published. And he claims that he found in Kibbutz Be'eri two girls, one of whom was lying on the floor with her pants pulled down, and there was sperm on her back, and that she had been raped. And the whole thing, and so this is one of the stories that immediately it starts to strike me as dodgy. It's, first of all, this sounds like, first of all, there's it's a hot conflict. So within about 2 hours of the Hamas attack that started about 6:30 a.m. on October 7th, the Israeli military is already responding with helicopter gunships, right? And so somehow this is supposed to happen. It sounds like something more like out of a porn movie, you know, that this girl is raped and some militant ejaculated on her back. And the thing
this was
though,
his claim.
This was his claim. But where the story really goes sideways, he says that he saw this in Nahal Oz, which is a different community, right? And in the original interview, he says Nahal Oz three times. If he just said it once, you know, one could accept, like, okay, maybe he just misspoke. But he said Nahal Oz three times, and he even translates the name which means river of strength. The problem was there was not two teenage girls who died in Nahal Oz. There was two adult sisters who died with their parents in Nahal Oz altogether. Mm-hmm. So there's this one of the most
right away that was it was disproven quickly because they didn't exist.
So what happened? So here's where the story starts to really get warped. So this kind of the chief propagandist in Benjamin Netanyahu's office is this guy named Ilan Levy, and he's been in the news the last week because he got suspended from the prime minister's office for getting into a fight on social media with high-ranking British politicians over the fact that, you know, Israel is causing this famine in Gaza, trying to kill people by starving, you know, trying to cause a genocide by starving them to death. So what Ilan Levy did was he just took a clip of this interview that eliminated all the references to Nahal Oz, and he said, and he tweeted it out and said, this happened in Kibbutz Be'eri, where two teenage sisters were killed. Now, they were killed with their mother. And so this is what starts to circulate. And from there, all these other media, CNN, Washington Post, Associated Press, this becomes one of the most widely spread atrocity stories. Now, just a couple of days ago, the New York Times was basically forced to retract it because another video came out showing the two girls who were shot. And this is what I'm saying. When I've looked at all these videos, all these photographs, there's only one photograph of a partially naked woman who is known, who's Gal Abdush, who she became known as the woman in the black dress. And she was, in fact, kind of the lead for the New York Times investigation, Screams Without Words. It focused on this video showing her burnt corpse on the ground with her dress pulled up. And this was used as like a claim of rape. But in terms of, you know, I don't want to get too much into the detail of the paramedic, but essentially he told this story where the details change. But on top of that, if you listen to the whole interview, he claims that his team found a dead baby in a trash can with multiple stab wounds on it. Again, totally fabricated, because there was one baby that was killed, and that's it, just one. Mila Cohen, she was shot in her mother's arms through a door. There was also a Bedouin woman who was pregnant and on the way to the hospital when the attack happened. She was shot in the stomach, and in the emergency room, the doctors tried to save the unborn baby via C-section, but it died, right?
But in those situations, it could have been not deliberate. It was just in the crossfire. I mean, if they're shot behind a door, it doesn't mean they were deliberately trying to kill a baby.
Right. No, but the point more is that the soldier is claiming he found a dead baby with stab wounds in a trash can.
Nobody was stabbed. No baby was found stabbed in the record.
much less in a trash can.
Now, what is this paramedic's name?
He's anonymous. In the interviews, his back is to the camera. He's only known as G. I know he's a sergeant, but I'm not sure.
Is that rare to try to make rape or these type of atrocity claims about babies without actually putting a name to it? Like, what? Why hide his name?
Well, that's a whole thing. You know, the media have bent over backwards to act as a conduit for Israeli disinformation. But I want to get to the bigger story. So, I lay it out in the Yes Magazine report, which very early on, there's this other official in Netanyahu's office. There's this this body called the National Information Directorate. And Eitan Schwartz is this volunteer consultant in there. And he gives this interview to Israeli media where he's talking about the Zaka volunteers and how important they were to Israeli propaganda. And Israel has a term for propaganda. It's called hasbara.
What does that mean?
So it translates as explanation or public diplomacy, but what it is really very sophisticated information, broad spectrum information warfare. It's all about how to use information and shape the narrative to advance the goals of the strategic, political, military goals of the Israeli state. And this is exactly what this official in Netanyahu's office, Eitan Schwartz, says, that the men of Zaka were instrumental in showing Western reporters what monsters Hamas were. And he says the entire state of Israel was fixed on the narrative of making Hamas equal to ISIS, because that, he said, and this is pretty much a direct quote, that deepened the legitimacy of the Israeli state to act with great force. Now, in the piece I did for The Intercept, what I show is, first of all, Zaka is this just utterly just disreputable, disgusting, vile organization whose founder, Yehuda Meshi Zahav, was essentially, so Zaka is a Haredi organization. They're ultra-Orthodox Jews. They, it's men only, but the founder of it, died 2 years ago. He basically raped dozens, he raped scores, possibly hundreds of Israeli children over a course of 20 years. So this is the absurdity of it, right? And meanwhile, Zaka was basically bankrupt. This is what I explained in the Intercept article on the eve of the October 7th attacks. The Israeli military, which is really one of the most sophisticated militaries in the world, has entire units of trained soldiers whose task it is to go into mass casualty events under fire and to gather human remains and preserve evidence. These units were mobilized and they were told to stand down. Instead, the Zaka volunteers are sent in, who are completely untrained in this task, and Haaretz did this incredible investigation where basically what they end up explaining is that I'm trying to find it. So Zaka volunteers are sent in to collect human remains, and Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper, that's one of the most notorious liars, Yossi Landau, and he's been totally exposed as a liar. And Haaretz said Zaka volunteers turned massacre sites into a war room for donations. They actually got a photograph showing them making fundraising videos with a bagged corpse as a prop, as a fundraising prop. They spread accounts of atrocities that never happened, and they didn't respect the human dead. They totally butchered the forensics that are now central to Israeli rape claims. So all these stories you hear about, we didn't have time to do forensics, we respect the dead too much. It turns out they were like leaving remains behind. They were mixing remains from different people in the same bag. They were taking bags of remains from the Israeli military and then rebagging them in their own bags and losing remains.
And this was according to the Haaretz?
And other reporting, yeah. Yeah, it's as I put it, Haaretz is where is the intersection of Enron meets Epstein Island meets George Santos. Now, the one figure, Yossi Landau, who he keeps appearing in that video clip that you see, he four times on camera, he outright says that we fabricate stories. He says, we use our imaginations. The bodies are telling us stories. So, and there's another official, one of the most senior Zaka official, Haim Ut Metzkin, who he's in an Israeli foreign ministry video where he's saying the walls scream rape, the stones scream rape, right? So they're outright admitting they fabricate atrocity stories.
Okay, and I just want for people that are just joining us or listening, tuning in right now or listening online, I'm speaking to Arun Gupta, investigative journalist, and he recently wrote this article on titled in Yes Magazine, Claims of Mass Rape by Hamas Unravel Upon Investigation. And before that, for The Intercept, he wrote, American media keeps citing Zaka, though its October 7th atrocity stories are discredited in Israel. I mean, within Israel itself, including Haaretz that you mentioned is an Israeli newspaper or media outlet, kind of similar, I guess, in status to like the New York Times, for Israel. Mm-hmm. And I pulled up this guy who you mentioned, Yossi,
Yossi Landau.
Yeah, this is an interview that I saw on Fox News where he's prominently featured.
And, he was all over the place.
He looks very familiar. He was all over the place in so many media outlets and so many featured stories. He became basically a spokesperson for the dead and for the raped. But you're saying this guy admits that they fabricate stories. But
we use our imagination. The bodies are telling us stories. That's so. And then
the evidence.
And they present themselves as holy. You know, the Times did this like glowing profile of them where it actually said they're on a holy mission. And it turns out they are the most vile, money-grubbing, just cynical operation you've seen. Because so the founder of it, Yehuda Meshi Zahav, he had been basically raping children back to the 1980s, some as young as 5 years old. He was going to get the Israeli prize in 2021, which is the highest prize, right? It's equivalent for a civilian, equivalent to the U.S. Presidential Medal of Freedom. And that was too much for his victims. And suddenly there was this outpouring of all these victims who came out to say how he had raped them 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, or close to 40 years ago. So we're talking boys, girls, and, you know, he was notorious in the ultra-Orthodox community. Everyone knew. The police had opened multiple investigations and had closed them without doing any sort of proper, they'd opened multiple cases and closed them without doing any proper investigation. One of his brothers went to jail for 7 years for raping a female relative. Another one of his brothers fled the country after he and Yehuda were accused of taking advantage of 8 teenage girls. And they were using Zaka resources to do this. Yehuda Meshi Zahav, who you see pictured, he would invite kids into his car. And, you know, one now adult said, you know, he would go around in the neighborhood with his new car, and Zaka bought him a new Jeep and invite us in, and he would get busy with us. And he said, he said, we didn't hear this. We experience this. And so the upshot of it is...
I'm looking this up, and there's an article from June 2020.
Read the Intercept report. It is unbelievably crazy.
But the Times of Israel here, just in 2022, says Meshi Zahav, he is the founder of Zaka, the Zaka founder, dies a year after attempting suicide amid rape allegations. Police were reportedly set to arrest Zaka founder before he tried to hang himself in April 2021. He was accused of dozens of sexual assaults, including against minors. And this is the Zaka founder, and you're saying basically on the eve of what was happening on October 7th, they're about to go bankrupt, but somehow they found a whole new purpose. And if you look at their website now, it's basically has been transformed into the October 7th hero story, and they're, you know, raising money.
We identified millions and millions of dollars. And in fact, this guy Yossi Landau was just suspended from Zaka. He went to a mega church in Texas where they raised $1 million, right? Because most Zionists in the world are not Jewish. They're these extremist Christians, right?
That's Christian Zionists. They call them like the John Hagee's kind of coalition.
Right.
So I'm surprised they have quotes or testimonials from people like Samantha Power, U.S. ambassador to the U.N. They're claiming she's saying something positive about them. That's crazy.
Well, there's a very good a documentary Al Jazeera just released about October 7th, where they go into some of this, where they have footage of Netanyahu just a few months ago meeting with Zaka volunteers. And again, he's saying the same thing. You're buying us time, right? Their propaganda. That guy, Simcha Greineman, who you just saw with that, you know, sad dog-eyed expression, he spoke before the United Nations, as did Sherry Mendez. That's the thing. Israel put the most just absurd, fabulous before the United at the United Nations at this big press conference they had on December 4th to push their fake rape claims. And Simcha Greineman, there's an interview I have with him where he claims that there were foreign fighters who came in on October 7th. Have you heard that anywhere else? And you want to know? You want to know how he found out they were foreign fighters?
No.
Because they had their IDs in their pockets, right? <Okay. laughs> that's what foreign fighters do. They come with their IDs in their pockets, right?
But the thing is, the international institutions, do they not do their homework? I mean, are they the Israeli government is just so sloppy that they're just putting up these people that have checkered past, that don't have credibility, and they just offer them to the world, to the United Nations, and no one's going to check their background?
Well, I like it. It's like copaganda, right? That we know cops lie all the time, and they say the most ridiculous, absurd things, but the media just repeat whatever they say with very little pushback, because the media are just mouthpieces for power. You know, we don't have genuine news in this country. What we have is a lot of propaganda, and especially in the last decade, we have a lot of grifting. We have...
In what way? What do you mean? Like, how are they grifting?
Well, I'm talking about media, right?
Yeah. How is the media grifting, or the media, I guess?
Well, on social media, yeah, right? Okay. There's you have stuff like, you know, I think like a lot of the far right media, like Newsmax, One America Network. Certainly, I think Fox News is kind of just a giant grift, right?
You're just telling people what they want to hear and reinforcing those kind of beliefs without actually checking.
They also admit that they know they're lying, but it's good for business, you know. Mm-hmm. So then you have a lot of partisan media, and you have a lot of infotainment. That's basically all the broadcast media. And then you have some legacy media, but they're owned by billionaires, right? You know, like the New York Times, like the Washington Post, the Baltimore Sun was just bought by, Sinclair, that extremist. They're even more extreme than Murdoch. I think the LA Times also was bought by some right-wing billionaire. So there is some, like, say, good investigative reporting out there, right? From, like, there's Type, there's Reveal, there's ProPublica, Mother Jones, you know, some other outfits. But generally, we don't have good media, news media in this country. It's really, you have outlets that just act as mouthpieces. You know, I did another interview recently where the interviewer just kept pressing me, but, you know, why would the media just repeat what Israel keeps saying? It's just like, because this is what they've always done. The Korean War, the Vietnam War, the Iraq War, the Central America wars, you know, the Persian Gulf War, the Afghanistan War. The media just act as mouthpieces for power. Sure, there's some criticism here and there, and there's some, I think, courageous reporters who really try to do honest reporting, but the main narrative that the vast majority of the public gets is just whatever the Pentagon is trying to sell to the public.
And so even though we don't have a state-owned media or necessarily these, and we have freedom of the press, you're saying the big media or mainstream media just ends up being a mouthpiece for those in power anyway. Not right, much different than authoritarian regimes.
Because they're a business. Their purpose is not to help people understand the world. Their purpose is not to help make people be critical thinkers to deepen their, you know, historical understanding. It's to sell products. You know, that's why they exist. You know, I haven't watched the network news in ages, but if you do, what's on there, right? Because old people are watching it. It's like lots of pharmaceutical ads for, you know.
And certain type of pillows and prosthetic stuff and, you know, things that don't necessarily apply. But okay, getting back to the story, all of this, came to head with the New York Times jumping into this and saying that they've conducted a, you know, multi-month investigation into these allegations. And, you know, they came out with this very long report that made a splash. And it was titled Screams Without Words. Screams Without Words, How Hamas Weaponized. How Hamas weaponized sexual violence on October 7th.
So let me quickly run through that, because there were two key reports. What I go through is the New York Times report, and then in late November, right before this big UN meeting, Physicians for Human Rights Israel, which is this actually a lefty Israeli NGO who has long advocated for Palestinian causes, releases this report that endorses the Israeli propaganda. And I ended up doing a two-hour interview with the author of the report that got pretty heated. She repeatedly kept saying that I was treating her like a prosecutor in court treats a rape victim. And finally, I just said to her, not every interview is a friendly interview.
Right.
And so what I showed is, so the New York Times relied on something like six or seven of the 12 sources. Physicians for Human Rights relied on 8 of the 12 sources, right? So we now know this paramedic is completely, his story, the paramedic from Unit 669, his story has been completely shown to be a lie, because now another video has surfaced showing the bodies of these two girls that there was no sexual mutilation.
Okay, so let's just back up about his specific claim. He says he witnessed two girls.
He came into a room, he saw two girls, and it kept changing. First it was one girl was sexually assaulted, then it was two, and then he said up to 6 people, and then it was back down to 1 or 2. But the initial story was he saw a girl on the floor, her pants were rolled down, so, you know, she was naked from the bottom down. And there was sperm on the back. So now it turns out that there is a video of the corpses of these two teenage sisters, and they're fully clothed, right? So that story is a lie.
And what area were those two sisters in? What city, what town, what kibbutz?
Kibbutz Be'eri, right?
Okay, so it wasn't the original kibbutz that this other person claimed of two teenagers.
Right, the paramedic.
Different
claim.
Location, okay.
Right. So there's that story. The New York Times, you see the image there, that's the family of Gal Abdush. That story has been debunked, because after the Times published it, they had access to the family. The family shared with them messages after, so Gal Abdush and her husband, Nagi Abdush, they were killed on October 7th. Yeah. And the Times is actually showing, there's a photo at one point of one of the sisters' telephones where you see the text messages that Gal Abdush is sending to the family. So the New York Times has access to these messages.
And Gal Abdush is the person that died or was killed.
And the New York Times claims she was raped because her corpse is found with the dress around her waist, right?
And she's the famous the one that they say, the woman in the black dress.
The woman in the black dress, right?
Okay. And for just our listeners that don't see the image, if you go to the New York Times story, there's an image on the feature story of this set, Screams Without Words, How Hamas Weaponized Sexual Violence, and it shows the family of Gal Abdush, her parents and her sister, and there's a picture of Gal and her husband on the wall. And the New York Times was saying that this woman in the black dress that they couldn't identify for a long time was actually not only killed, but she was sexually assaulted and raped before that. So what's the truth about this story that you
discovered? Well, so they're just going on a video that this woman came across her corpse, which had clearly, you know, there's a deep wound in one leg. Her head is completely burned, the flesh down to the skull. And they're claiming just because a dress is up, that indicates rape. And when I see this, I'm like, this is absurd. It's war. All sorts of stuff happens in war. There's explosions. Mm-hmm. There was a grenade thrown at her. You have no idea what happened. But it turns out what the Times did, it hid from the readers that there's a series of messages. At 6:51, Gal Abdush sends a text message saying, "We're at the border. The explosions are like so intense or so crazy. We're leaving," right? Implying they're getting in the car because her corpse is found next to the car that's also been blown up. At 7 a.m., 9 minutes later, her husband, Nagi Abdush, calls one of his brothers and leaves a message. I can't remember now. Maybe he talks to him. But the message is that Gal has been shot in the heart and is dying. Right. Mm. And then another one of her sisters said there was only a 4 minute window, right? So we're expected to believe in 4 minutes, they come across Hamas fighters. Hamas fighters capture them. Hamas fighters rape them. Meanwhile, Nagi Abdush, the husband, is still able to communicate with the family and doesn't say a word at all about the fact that his wife is being raped. And then she's killed. And with a grenade bullets in all happening within this 4 minute window, right? That's basically impossible. So that story has been discredited, right?
The paramedic. So the New York Times had these messages, but refused to actually share these details.
Well, they're selective. They're incredibly selective, right? So they use multiple Zaka volunteers, including Yossi Landau in the story, and now it comes out, you know, that. So here's a third source that has been exposed as a liar. They talked to Sherry Mendez. She's the first one who I told you about. Her stories are a big lie as well. They make allegations that women's bodies were mutilated with sexual organs were mutilated with metal objects, that there were gunshot patterns targeting women's body. If you read the UN report, which was problematic, that came out from Pramila Patton, it was completely misreported by the media because, yes, she does claim, and I think like it's dubious that there were some rapes on October 7th. But if you read the report, it's not verified. She's rejecting all these Israeli claims. And she even says there is no evidence women's sexual organs were mutilated with objects and that there is no, she goes through this detailed analysis talking about from the photographs we saw, there is nothing that indicates targeting of women's sexual organs, right? Then you have there's only two witnesses who claim they saw mass rape. One is a former Special Forces commando named Raz Cohen. His story has come under fire and has changed multiple times and appears dubious. Then there's this anonymous witness known as Witness S or Sapir, who she's being stage managed by the Israeli police. Her story is so absurd, it defies believability. She's claiming that 100 militants were gathered, were gang raping 5 women. They were cutting off body parts. They were raping corpses. They were carrying around severed heads and doing everything to them, which doesn't leave much to the imagination, right? And somehow there's no other witnesses. There would be a huge amount of forensic evidence. There's no photo evidence. So basically the whole Time story has fallen apart. But now, you know, and I do want to reiterate this, there is one completely credible survivor who has come forward. That was what was completely missing. But the most important thing we have to remember is this is completely erasing what is happening to Palestinians, because for months Palestinian men and women have been coming forward with credible allegations about sexual violence done to them. I've been collecting all these videos of Palestinian women traumatized who are talking about how Israeli forces, you know, they took the whole family, they killed members of the family, they made all the women strip, they, you know, verbally abused them, they would torture some of them. Now, there haven't, from what I've seen, have been any credible allegations of rape, but that also depends on how you define rape. Because Al Jazeera has gotten access to this unpublished UNRWA report, that's the United Nations Relief Works Agency. They interviewed over 1,000 detainees, basically hostages, Gazans that Israel captured, took to Israel, and then shipped back to Gaza. And among all the abuse, you know, the sexual violence, the humiliation, the torture, the degrading treatment, they say... they don't give a number, but it sounds like more than a few had electric sticks shoved up their rectum, right? So you're talking that they are being raped with weapons, okay? So none of this is in the media, even though
it's not in the mainstream media. But I did see some reports, for example, UN experts condemn credible reports of execution, sexual assault by Israeli soldiers. And there was reports earlier this week that... in Israeli media that a U.S. general or some sort of military general had brought up
claims, a State Department official said to an Israeli general, because the Israeli general went on Israeli radio and said that the U.S. State Department official raised with them sexual violence. Israeli forces.
There are reports that it's happening, but it's not making it into the media on this end. But meanwhile, we keep hearing about the allegations of these atrocities of mass rapes on October 7th, which now have been debunked. But politicians continue to repeat it. Pundits on TV continue to repeat it. And it seems to be designed in a way to provide political cover for the ongoing genocide. I mean, talk a little bit about that. What's the strategy behind all this? If they actually are fabricating these things, it seems like they're doing it on purpose and it's systematic. And knowing, so what's the strategy behind this? And why specifically rape and specifically of Israeli women, why it's taken more seriously in the mass media here?
Right. Well, Ed, that is such a great question. And you know, I think it's a good question for us to finish on, because this is the next article I'm doing also for Yes Magazine. And what I say is the Israeli atrocity propaganda is an industrial scale rape hoax that is straight out of the Jim Crow era. Now, we have to remember there were all these atrocities during the Jim Crow era that started with rape hoaxes. You know, the race massacre by white mobs that ended up involving the U.S. Army of Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma in 1921, where up to 300 people were killed, started as a rape hoax. Emmett Till, the murder, you know, one of the most famous murders associated with the Jim Crow era. It began with this white woman who later, late in life, she admitted she made false accusations that he made sexually suggestive remarks towards her. There was the Rosewood Massacre in Florida, where I think up to 70 people were killed, started with a rape hoax as well. And we can look to other parts of history, right? It's the same thing with Native Americans. You know, that there was all this, like, a fear that would be whipped up, that, you know, the savages were going to defile the purity of white women. So therefore, we need to wipe out the savages. That is exactly the same thing that is going on in Israel today, that they are, because rape is something that very much cuts at the core of the national being, right? That the idea that the women are violated, it combines nationality, gender, family, sexuality, you know, it emasculates the men. And this is also why we see so much sexual violence from Israeli male soldiers in Gaza, right? All these stripping of
and as payback for what they perceive happened to their people.
So they have to reconstruct their masculinity by committing sexual violence. You know, there's I found this photo of something like 20 Palestinian men completely naked, lying on the ground, blindfolded and trussed up, right, with Israeli soldiers standing over them. Or another video of naked Palestinian men being put on a bus. But how many videos and images have we seen of Palestinian men humiliated in their underwear, being paraded about, hundreds and hundreds? This is all sexualized violence. And yet the media says nothing about this, and right. I said it's because I think the media just act as a mouthpiece for empire. I don't think it's, you know, it's, was it any different during the British Empire? You know, was it any different, you know, when France's imperial projects from Algeria to Indochina? You know, it's, you'll always find dissenters, but the media generally, the capitalist media, always sign on to the imperial project because they are part of the imperialist, capitalist project.
We're going to have to leave it there. Arun Gupta, thank you so much for joining us. This has been True Talk on WMNF, WMNF Tampa. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.